Samach Dalid. We're on Samach Dalid. I'm an Aleph wrote to the ninth line of the Gemara. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Kahana, Hava Yasivna Bishili Pirkei Durav, Vishamaez de Ka'amar Kare Kare, Velo Yodana Mai Ka'amar. Rav Kahana was sitting at the far end of the lecture hall when Rav was giving a shir, and he heard Rav mention or say, Kare Kare. Kare in Aramaic mean gourds or pumpkins, but he had no idea what Rav was saying. Basar de Kam Rav, Amri Luhu, Mai Kare Kare de Ka'amar Rav. So Rav finished the shir, he left, and then Rav Kahana goes up to one of the students there, and he's like, what was Rav talking about? So Amri Li Haki Ka'amar Rav, Hai man di yohiv zuze ligina akare, v'ka'azle asara kare b'nei zarta, v'amarle yohavino lecha b'nei garmida, isnehu share, leisnehu aser. So one of the students there explained to Rav Kahana the following, that Rav was making reference to a halacha, this concept we've already discussed, you know, on yesterday's daf and throughout this parak already, in the context of ribbis, that has to do with gourd. So in other words, imagine the following. Let's say, you have a person who wants to purchase some gourds, some pumpkins from a gardener, and the gardener is selling gourds that are the size of a span. A span is basically the size of your hand, from your thumb to your pinky. But the farmer says to the prospective buyer, if you pay me in advance, I'll, in a couple of weeks, I'm going to give you gourds that are twice the size, that are the size of an amma. So I'm going to give you the larger gourds. So basically, the Gemara says, Rav says that provided that the farmer has the gourds on him at the present moment, that obviates the concern of ribbis. There's no issue of ribbis. But if he doesn't have the gourds on him, that's a violation of ribbis. Again, this is in line with a lot of the halachos the Gemara was discussing the last couple of days. So asks the Gemara Pshita, what's the chiddush? This case sounds like every other case the Gemara yesterday was discussing. So the Gemara says, no. Mahu desema kevan dememela karavu shapir dame kamash malan. The hava amina would have been that this case of gourds is slightly different from the other scenarios the Gemara mentioned, because the gourds grow on their own. If you just leave the gourds in the ground, they're going to continue growing. So one could argue that maybe the farmer doesn't need to have gourds that are the size of an amma in his possession right now, because in 3 weeks from now, the gourds that are half the size are going to double in size. So one might have thought that you don't need the gourds that size right now in his possession to overcome the concern of ribbis. So no, kamash malan, that even in the case of gourds, the only way to overcome the issue of ribbis is if the farmer has those size gourds in his possession at the present time. Then the Gemara asks, keman, which, in other words, like which tana does this halacha conform? Ki hai tana, desanya, haholich lachlo v'sizav v'ligzos esrechilav v'lirdos eskavarto. So imagine you have a farmer who's going either to milk his goats, to shear his sheep, to go and extract honey from his beehives. Mitzo chaveru v'amarlo. Masha izai cholvos machur lecha, masha rechili gozuzos machur lecha, masha kavarti rode machur lecha mutter. Avalim amarlo, masha izai cholvos kach v'chach machur lecha, masha rechili gozuzos kach v'chach machur lecha, masha kavarti rode kach v'chach machur lecha aser. V'afal gav de memela karavu, kevan de lesnehu behahishai daser. In this first version of the Gemara illustrates the case as follows. The farmer on his way to go and milk his goats, shear his sheep, extract honey from his beehives, he bumps into some guy and he says, listen, I'm going to sell you the milk, the wool, or the honey. So the Gemara says, if he just makes his blanket statement and he says to the guy, I'm going to sell you the wool or the milk or the honey, that's totally mutter. There's no concern of ribbis there at all. However, if the farmer starts to get particular and says, I'm going to sell you X amount of milk, wool, or honey, that's already a problem of ribbis, says the Gemara. And the Gemara says that that's true, even though all of these things, the milk, the wool, and the honey, they come on their own, right? The animals naturally produce milk, and the sheep naturally grow wool, and the honey naturally comes out of the beehive. The Gemara says that because those things are not currently in the possession of the farmer, of a haraya, he's going to get them, he's going to milk the animals and to shear the sheep and to extract the honey, the Gemara says that's a concern of ribbis. So this brisa, says the Gemara, seems to support Rav's contention that even though the items, the gourds, grow naturally, if they're not currently in the possession of the farmer or the gardener, that's a concern of ribbis. So that's in the first version. However, the Gemara says, Iku da amre, amar Rava, kevan de memela ka ravu shapir dame. In the second version, Rava says that because the gourds grow naturally, therefore it's mutter. There is no concern of ribbis, even though the farmer or the gardener does not currently have the larger gourds in his possession at this moment. It doesn't make a difference. There is no issue of ribbis. So asks the Gemara, what do you mean? V'hasanya kach v'chach aser. But in other words, doesn't the brisa say that if the farmer says to the guy, I'm going to sell you X amount of milk, wool, or honey, that's a problem. So how is that different from the case of the gourds? So the Gemara says, no. Hasam lav minei karavu deshak lelei lahai v'asei acharina beduchte hacha minei karavu. The Gemara says that there is a conceptual difference between the case of the gourds versus the scenario of the wool, of the wool milk and honey. Specifically, in the case of the wool milk and honey, after you milk the goats or you shear the sheep or you extract honey from the hives, all of those things are eventually going to be replaced. The goat's is going to produce more milk. The sheep is going to grow more wool. The beehive is going to eventually produce more honey. In the case of a gourd, when you pick a gourd out of the ground, so unless you plant a new one, there's no new gourd that's coming in its place. In other words, once it's picked out of the ground, that's it. So the Gemara says, conceptually, these cases are completely different, and therefore, just because in the case of the gourds, in the second version, the Gemara argues that there's no concern of ribbis, even if the farmer does not currently have the larger sized gourds, that doesn't necessarily translate to our case of the wool, milk, and honey. Okay, then the Gemara says, Amar Abaye, Shari li le'inish, le'meimar le'lechav, right? Heilach arba zuze achavisa dechamra, itakva birashusach, iyakra izila birashusi. Comes Abaye and says that a person can go over to another to another person and make the following statement, and say, take these four zuz, and I'm going to deliver a barrel of wine to you in the future. And he says, if the wine sours and turns to vinegar, so that's going to be on you. You're going to have to absorb the loss. However, if there's a fluctuation in the market that the price of wine decreases, so I'm going to accept that loss. Abaye says, that's mutter. There's no issue of ribbis in such a scenario. So Amar le Rav Sharavya li Abaye, hakarov l'sachar v'rachok lehevsidu. So comes Rav Sharavya and asks on Abaye, why is that, in other words, why is that not an issue of ribbis? The Gemara a little bit later on, Rav Ayin tells us that whenever you have what's called karov l'schar v'rachok lehevsidu, you have a situation that it's likely, it's probable that one of the one of the people involved in the case is going to profit, and there's only a very small possibility of losing out. That's still considered to be ribbis. So the Gemara says, no. Amar le kevan de mekabel alezula karov lazev lazehum. Abaye responds to Rav Sharavya and says that since the prospective seller is accepting upon himself any depreciation in the market value of the wine, so basically everything is equal now. They both have the same opportunity, the same chance of either profiting or losing from the wine. One party is going to lose if the wine sours and turns to vinegar. The other party is going to lose if the market value fluctuates and decreases. So that's considered to be basically an equal opportunity scenario for the value to decrease. Okay, then the Mishnah says, Hamalva es chaveiro lo yador bachatzero chinam v'lo yiskor mimedu befachos mipenei shehu ribis. In other words, imagine the following. Reuven lends money to Shimon. Reuven is not allowed to live in Shimon's house, courtyard, or a property for free. And not only that, he can't even live there at a discounted rate. In other words, let's say the going rate for rent for a month is $3,000. So he's not allowed to give him a discount because it looks like ribis. Okay, it's not actual ribis because he's not, in other words, he's not building into the stipulation that he has to live there from the outset, but it looks like ribis. It's a violation of ribis derabban. So the Gemara explains, Amar Rav Yosef bar Manyumi, Amar Rav Nachman, Afa pi sha'amru hadar b'chatzar chaveru shalom midaito, eino tzarech lahalos lo sachar, halvehu vidar b'chatzero, tzarech lahalos lo sachar. This is a Gemara we actually discussed way back in the second parak above a comma, where the Gemara tells us the following. Let's say a person is squatting and living in your house, in your possession, in your property without your knowledge. Let's say you have a summer home that you basically 10 months out of the year you never go to, and some guy decides to move into your summer home. You have no idea he's there. Then you find out 9 months later that the guy has been living in your house for the last 9 months. So the Gemara says that the person who's been squatting there is not obligated to pay rent or to pay you anything for living in your house. However, the Gemara says, if the person who's living in your house happens to be someone who lent you money, so then the halacha is he has to pay you rent, again, presumably because it looks like ribis. So asks the Gemara, my kamash malon tanina, hamal ve'ez chaveru lo yadur b'chatzeru chinam v'lo yeskor mimenu b'fachos nuneshi ribis. That's exactly what our Mishnah said. What's the chiddush of this statement, of this brisa that the Gemara quotes in Bava Kama? This is basically what our Mishnah just told us, that if someone lent you money, so that of course you can't just move in rent-free because it looks like ribis. So the Gemara says, no. Imi masnisen hava amina hani mile b'chatzer dekaima la'agra v'gavra de'ovid le'megar, aval chatzer de In the first version of the Gemara says that the Hava Amina would have been, if we only had our Mishnah here, I might have argued that the only time we say, or the only time that we insist that the person who moves in is going to have to pay rent, otherwise there's a concern of ribis, that's assuming, number one, that it's a type of a courtyard, a type of a house, a type of a property that was meant to be rented out, it's suitable for others to live in, and also it's a type of a person that needs a place to live. It's not like he has other property or other house houses he can move into. In other words, if he doesn't move in here, he's going to have to pay rent to some other guy to move into his property. However, if it's, let's say, either a type of a property that's not set, you know, that's not set to be rented out, or it's a person who has other places to go, he doesn't need to live here, he can easily go to one of his other properties, I might have argued that perhaps there is no requirement for him to pay rent because it doesn't really look like rent is. So no, Kamash Mulan, in the first version of the Gemara, they know that even in this case, he's going to have to pay rent to obviate the concern of ribis. Then the Gemara says, Ika da'amr, in the second version, Amar Rav Yosef Barman Yumi, Amar Rav Nachman, Afa Pisha Amru Hadar Bachatzar Chaveru Shalomi Daito Enu Tzorech Lahalos Lo Sachar, Halveni Vidur Bachatziri Tzorech Lahalos Lo Sachar. In the second version, the Gemara says that although normally it's true that a person who squats and lives in your property without your knowledge normally does not need to pay rent, however, if he lent money to you on the condition, in other words, I'm only going to lend you the money if you let me live in your property, says the Gemara, then of course he has to pay the rent. So the Gemara explains, Manda Amar Halveyu, Kol Shekein Halveni, Umanda Amar Halveni, Aval Hilveyu Lo, Mai Taima, Keva Deme Ikara Lava Daita, Dahachi Osvei Leis Lamba. The Gemara explains that the two versions of the statement of Rav Yosef are not necessarily mutually exclusive or interdependent. Meaning, if you take the first version of the Gemara, where the case was halvei just means that some guy lent you money, and then it just happened to be that the same guy moved into your property. There was no connection between those two things. He lent you money, and 3 months later, the guy decides to move in. So the Gemara says, if you think that in that scenario he has to pay rent because it looks like ribis, then kal v'chomer in the second case where the lender made it dependent on lending you that money that he would move into your property, then of course he has to pay rent because that certainly looks like ribis. However, if you take the second version of the Gemara that it's Halveni, that he basically said, I'm only lending you the money on the condition that you let me move into your property, so that in the first case, that in other words, that second version of the Gemara would say that the first case is permissible for the person to avoid paying rent. Why? Because when he lent you the money initially, it was never on the condition that he was going to move into your property. It wasn't like he lent you that money with that knowledge. He never explicitly stated that, and therefore, if you subscribe to the second version of the Gemara, you don't necessarily think that it's problematic to avoid paying rent for a squatter in the first case, where the money was never lent with that intention in the first place. Okay, the Gemara says, Rav Yosef Bar Chama, Takif Avde De Inche, De Masik Behu Zuze, The Oved Behu Avde. We also quoted this story back above a comment in the same Gemara, where the Gemara tells us that Rav Yosef Bar Chama had the practice of seizing slaves of people who owed him money. So some guy owed him money, didn't get a chance to pay back his debt for whatever reason. He would go around, send out his henchmen to go and grab the slaves of the various debtors who owed him money. So Amar Le Rava Bere, Mai Taima Avin Marachi. So Rava confronted his father, Rav Yosef, and said, why are you doing this? Amar Le Anakir Rav Nachman Svirali. To Amar Rav Nachman, Avda Nohem Kresi Lo Shave. So his father, Rava's father, justified to him, said, I'm following the statement of Rav Nachman that appears in the beginning of Maseches Gittin, where Rav Nachman tells us that a slave is not even worth the bread that you fill his stomach with. What does that mean? That basically means is that Rav Nachman is claiming that the amount of food that you need to feed a slave and the room and board and all the other things that you need to supply to him, it's not worth the amount of labor that you get out of him, which is another way of saying that I'm not causing these owners any loss because I'm actually helping them out. I'm feeding him, in other words, all the work that he would theoretically be doing for his owner is not, you know, in other words, is not gaining them enough to counterbalance the amount of money they have to lay out for his room and board, for his food, etc. So I'm actually helping them. So Amar Le, so Rava, his son, responds, Amar de Amar of Nachman could go Dore Avdi de Merakin Bekuve, Avdi Acharini Me Amar. Rava deflects his father's argument and says, that's only true for Rav Nachman's slave Daru, right? Daru was the slave of Rav Nachman, and the Gemara tells us here in Bava Kama that Daru basically didn't do anything. He was this old slave who used to dance amongst wine barrels. In other words, he wasn't really, an active working slave. So therefore, for him, for someone like Daru, yes, you're right, that it's not worth the financial investment for the amount of food you have to feed him and the room and board, etc., because he's not really doing anything. But a regular slave who actually works, who's actually producing things, so in fact, it is going to be worth it, and therefore you are causing a loss to all of the other people that you're seizing the slave from. So Amar Le, Ana ki hadarav Daniel barav ktina amarav sirali, da Amar hatokef avdo shel chaviro v'asa bo malach. So now, Rava's father, Rav Yosef, tries to again justify his actions, where he says, no, I'm relying on a different statement, the statement of Rav Daniel, who says that if a person goes ahead and seizes his friend's slave without his consent or without his knowledge, and he forces that his friend's slave to work for him, so the halacha is that he's pater. He's not obligated to pay compensation to the friend that he stole the slave from, that he forced the slave to work. Why? Because it's in the friend's best interest that his slave works, that his slave does his work. He doesn't want his habits of hard work to be undone. And therefore, the Gemara says that actually the owner doesn't feel like he's actually losing anything. So on tomorrow's after, the Gemara is going to continue this conversation between Rava and his father.